September 16, 2016 was a special day. It was the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the IBEW's Henry Miller Museum. Every chair set up in the green space adjacent to Founders Plaza was taken. I gave mine up and stood on the sidewalk. I was too excited to sit anyway. Our ribbon for this ceremony was a length of copper wire, and there was a long line of us set to do the honors. So many, in fact, that the ribbon ran a good third of the length of the plaza, looping through four or five stanchions, crossing over the steps leading down into Founders Plaza. On one end, a table dressed in black felt was covered with chrome-plated side cutters. When the moment arrived, everyone stood up. Executive officers, Historical Society board members, representatives from some of the sponsoring local unions, the renovation team, all of us grabbed a pair of side cutters and lined up facing the plaza. The moment we had all been waiting for had finally arrived, and what a sight it was. 10 Class 1 utility poles, one for each of the Founding Fathers, towered overhead. At the top of each pole, large, colorful Mickey Mouse glass insulators, gleaming in the noonday sun, carried four strands of number 6 hard-drawn copper as it drooped from pole to pole over the antique wooden crossarms. Below the crossarm, a bronze sculpture of a lineman gestured toward an eternal flame. At night, that sculpture would be bathed in the warm glow of an LED lamp from a converted oil lantern that hung nearby. A conformal bronze plaque wrapped partially around the base of each pole credited the sponsoring local union. It was a fitting tribute to our founders and one constructed humbly by the lineman volunteers of IBEW Local 1439. On this day, 128 years after our formation, we take the time to thank the linemen who constructed Founders Plaza and along the way learn a little about line life and the positive impact of the IBEW in the electrical utility industry. Chartered March 16, 1945, IBEW Local 1439 is growing again under the leadership of business manager Jeremy Poor.
So we're a utility local.
Okay.
So we have Ameren in the St. Louis area. We have Alliant Energy up in Iowa. We have Entergy down in Arkansas. We actually have 42 gas utility workers for the Liberty down in Jackson, Missouri. And then we have the city of Potosi, and we just organized the city of DeSoto, and we're getting close to ratifying our first contract there.
Jeremy would be 1439's third business manager since the ribbon cutting in 2016, and although his official duties have changed since the convention, he maintains a steadfast commitment to supporting the mission of the museum and was a key contributor to the plaza during his time as an officer under former business manager Mike Walter.
You know, it's in St. Louis. It's in the birthplace, you know. You know, we might not have been Local 1 or Local 2, the first, you know, lineman local out there, but it's important for us to have a namesake in the project as well because, you know, we take a lot of pride in being St. Louis. And, you know, we have a saying on the shirt there, we keep the lights on. You know, that's what 1439 does in the St. Louis area and the surrounding is we're a utility local, and every day, day in and day out, we keep the lights on.
Mike was the principal officer of Local 1439 and also represented the 5th District on the International Executive Council during the 11-month sprint that would resurrect our founding home in time for our 125th anniversary. We sat down with Mike after the convention to discuss the museum project and why the museum was so important to everyone at 1439.
Yeah, I knew for one thing that our local, the size of our local and our treasury, we weren't going to be able to make a huge donation. And I was of the opinion from the time when it was that becoming a reality that the locals in St. Louis, we were so fortunate to be not only locals in St. Louis where the IBEW started, but so fortunate to have this museum, this project, right in our own backyard. I felt as though all the locals, IBEW locals in St. Louis, should engage and assist in making sure it's a good project. It comes out well. And I also didn't think that, I personally still believe this, I admired Local 1 taking on the project, but I felt that it was so much burden on Local 1 that that wasn't really fair. I'm just being honest with you. So how do we take our talents, our crafts, and what we can do, our resources, and supply some benefit, some assistance? That's really what I wanted to do from the very beginning. You know, obviously, we have linemen, and when we acknowledged Founders Park that was going to be constructed, we thought, this is our opportunity to provide some assistance.
Mike would then select one of his most talented linemen, Marty Polite, to head up the design and construction of the plaza. Here now is former business representative Mark Staffney.
Well, Marty forever was the apprentice trainer for the overhead, apprentice program at Ameren. And if you know Marty Polite, he lives and dies lineman. So all you had to do is say, hey, Marty, we got a project for you. And he's there, you know, he's that type of guy.
And Jeremy, then vice president, would begin working with his former president, Billy Howell, and other members to rebuild the utility infrastructure surrounding the museum. They did this work on their own time without fanfare. In fact, no one involved with the museum project would realize just how many volunteer hours they contributed until we interviewed these men after the convention.
At our executive board, we talked about the project when it first got kicked off. I was vice president at that time, so I was at executive board meetings and talking about the project that was then under the former business manager, Walters. And when the work came up that was needed done for the electrical work, all the upgrades and new poles and everything for the museum, that was actually in the district that I worked in. So I was able to coordinate all of our guys getting out there, and we actually had, almost our whole garage. We probably had 15 guys that volunteered their time after work one night to go and rebuild everything in the alley behind the museum to eliminate all that cost for the museum. So it was pretty neat to see everybody step up.
On the volunteer response and those Class 1 utility poles I mentioned at the outset, here again is Mike Walter.
More than enough volunteers to work after work and on the weekends to upgrade the system coming into the property, upgrade transformers and all that kind of stuff. So the guys did all that on their own time. So there was those man hours were saved. Got the 35-foot Class 1s, which is a good stout pole. Got 10 of those and delivered, which was very good. So we felt like we were doing something to assist in making this a successful project. So
the Class 1s were important, but they weren't the only thing. Jeremy Poore.
Yeah, Class 1. I mean, you want something that looks good, it's going to last, and everybody, when you linemen come, they see what it's built. I mean, I know it's important to make sure the lines looked a certain way and it was tied in, correctly, and the poles looked and all faced the same direction, how they're supposed to face. It's a way that you're supposed to build it. And I mean, I know Marty Polite and myself, we put all those poles in, and it was important to make sure that they were proper, everything looked good, because it's going to be viewed by thousands and thousands of people over the years.
Between business managers Walter and Poore was Doug Miller. As a representative, Doug was involved in the coordination volunteer effort when the museum project kicked off in 2015, and his commitment continued as their business manager. Shortly after he grabbed the reins, the 8 lineman statues that were missing during the convention would arrive and need to be installed. I know we all enjoy seeing them up there, 30 feet in the air, but make no mistake, lofting 500 pounds of bronze up on a pole is no small task. Here's 1439's former president, now business representative, Billy Howell.
So we tried to do it. We were very conscious of the museum and the property, not wanting to bring big equipment in to it would damage anything in the museum parking lot or the bricks, the beautiful bricks that were sold. So we tried to do it manually the old way with gin and blocks, and it probably took us longer to hang that first statue than it did to do the rest of them. We finally realized that wasn't going to work. And we brought in some equipment that would not damage the property, the light piece of equipment that had rubber tires, and we put plywood down. But yeah, the first one, I'm glad you don't have that on video, because every lineman in the world would make fun of Marty and myself.
And brother Mark Staffney wasn't a bit worried.
I think they had a little trouble in the beginning getting those linemen up on the pole. They may have not been casted right or something, but once they figured that out, it really didn't take that long. I mean, that's a little project for those overhead guys.
Mark's referring to the mounting locations that were cast into the statues. One, on the left, was meant to appear as a gaff once secured. The other, on the inner thigh, would prove almost impossible to align. We asked Billy about that first long day, but it was a loaded question. We had watched them struggle and knew the answer, but we never heard one complaint. As Marty and Billy wrestled those first two statues, a journeyman wireman from Rock Island, Illinois, had arrived early for the convention and was wandering down below, surveying the partially completed plaza.
I would say the first statue probably took all day, and it was a lot of work. I was also really proud that, all the IBWs that stepped up wanting to purchase with a statue, because it's very impressive, and I had heard that they even kind of fought over them a little bit about, when you start running out of not having enough statues for all the people that wanted to support the museum with sponsorships of the statues.
Billy was right. I was initially concerned after our executive officers had established a $75,000 donation level for the statues, but not for long. All 10 of them were taken in the first 3 months of the campaign, all but two of them sponsored by local unions representing line workers. And the assortment of insulators donated by Local 9's Larry Venziano? Well, it's one thing to admire them. It's another thing altogether to install them on a pen. The consensus was unanimous. Here's former business manager Miller.
Amazing. I've never seen anything like that. Was before my time. I started doing line work in 1989. And even back then, I don't even remember taking anything down that old. So I know they're quite interesting. We do have a guy that's a lineman out in one of our metropolitan garages. He actually collects those insulators. And I was talking to him about them. He said they're pretty rare.
Billy Howell.
I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that it'd even be in existence, you know, because, you know, you're just talking about something so old and they were all in such great shape. That was just like very exciting. The whole museum, by the way, I mean, every time I walk through it, even though I've been through it many, many times, the hair stands up in the back of my neck. The work that Local One and everyone involved did was fantastic and should make every IBW member very proud.
Marty Polite.
Oh, those are awesome. Yeah, whoever donated those, you just don't come across that very often, those type of insulators. And they really look good up there. I got to get a chance to get back there. And I think I've been back once since we finished all that. But, yeah, those are awesome. Those insulators are beautiful, beautiful insulators. And whoever donated them really needs a pat on the back.
We asked Marty if he saved any of the insulators he replaced during his career.
You know, you really didn't realize it back then. And I look back at it now, there are so many things I wish I would have said, hey, I'd like to hang on to that. You know, date nails. I've got several date nails at home, you know. And when they used to set a pole, they'd drive a date nail in. And I've got some really, 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 really old ones. Not, you know, I'm talking about back in the 20s and even a little earlier than that, when we'd pull a pole or change a pole out, I'd save the date nails from them. And they're pretty interesting, knowing that back in the turn of the century, some lineman drove that nail in the pole. And 60, 70, 80 years later, I'm hanging on to it. But, yeah, the insulators, I probably came across so many nice insulators. But back in the day, you really didn't even think anything of it. You just discarded them and changed them out to new ones. And I wish I would have saved a lot of that stuff. Some of those old boxed-in switches or wooden switches, what we call them. There's a few of them down at the museum. You know, I can remember taking some of them down off a pole. And in the 80s, it really started to change. You know, I started in the mid to late 70s. And in the 80s, distribution really started to change. It really got more modern. And the technology got a lot better in line work than it did. You know, it seemed like when it changed in a hurry. And I wish back in the 70s, I would have changed or would have hung on to a lot of that stuff that we took down and threw away. But some people did hang on to it. Some of it's still down in the museum.
Marty would follow his father and all his brothers into the trade. And it didn't take him long to realize he had line work in his blood.
It can't be afraid of heights. Yeah, I can still remember the first pole I went up. You didn't get much training back in those days. You just say, here's a pair of hooks. Let's see if you can get up and down this pole. See if you got to be good enough to do this. And I remember that day, and I think it was about a 60-foot pole, and I got to the top of it and came back down. I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. But actually, my dad was a lineman, and I've got five brothers that are linemen also, four brothers that are linemen. I'm the fifth one. So it's been in our family, and several of my uncles were linemen. So it's been in my family since I can remember. Yeah, he had like 40 years with the IBEW, and I can remember when he bring a company truck home back when I was just a kid. We played with blocks and shivs and ropes a lot when I was young. A lot of climbing. There was no bucket trucks back in we'd climb. I can remember some days we was clipping those H fixtures and we'd climb probably 10 a day and ranging anywhere from 80 foot to 100 foot poles a day. And we did that day in and day out. Yeah, bucket truck. I didn't see a bucket truck till I was getting close to being a journeyman.
We asked Billy Howell how line work has changed during his career.
You know, everything's changed, even to the point where now, you know, with the equipment and everything, you know, the main part of being a lineman has always been early on the one thing that made it such a unique job was being able to climb a pole and just having a couple spikes with a quarter inch of metal and a piece of wood. That has evolved, and with buckets, and now even within the past, I would say 5 years, they've actually got backyard buckets. So climbing really is what makes a lineman proud. Not many people can do it as far as heights as well, but the equipment has just changed the job completely. It's still a very technical job. I mean, obviously, in the past, you know, you were climbing and you did almost everything de-energized. Now in the world we live in, nobody can have their electricity off because their iPad won't work or whatever technology they're using. So it's very rare now to be able to turn off somebody's power to do our job, which is it's challenging, doing everything hot, keeping everybody's electricity on. So we actually, you know, we have gloves that are rated for 10,000 volts. So everyday linemen are out there with those rubber gloves on, touching a line that has 7,200 volts on it. And that's just an everyday occurrence now. Where, you know, even 30 years ago, you know, it didn't happen. We did all our work with 8-foot sticks, and we didn't touch it, the line. That's been the biggest evolution in our trade.
As impressive as these men are, this work is unforgiving of any carelessness or complacency. We asked them about the danger, a constant companion for every lineman. We talked about the friends they've lost. They've all lost friends, all of them. Marty Polite.
And I look back at my career and probably 8 or 9 linemen that I work with, either up in a bucket with or climb a pole with, at least 8 or 9 of them got killed in the trade. And I look back at it and, you know, you just thank goodness that you got through it and got through them tough times. And some of the stuff I used to see, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I just seen him do that, you know, and it was pretty competitive. The work's gotten a lot better. Guys have gotten a lot smarter, and safety rules has gotten so much better, so much better. I mean, back in when I started, pretty much done whatever you think you was big enough to do, but it's a lot different than that now.
And the credit for those positive changes, Billy Howell.
I actually credit the IBW. IBW was founded on safety. You know, that's the reason it was started, and if it wasn't for the IBW, I don't think things would have ever moved forward, and we would still be working, you know, like they did in the old days where, you know, back when Henry Miller started it, 50% of the linemen were killed on the job, including Henry Miller himself, obviously. So if it wasn't for the IBW, this would not be a very desirable job like it is now.
Business manager Jeremy Poor.
Yeah, that's what the IBW is founded on. And I'd say we're probably more safe now than in any time in the history of line work. The attitude and the teaching from a company perspective that, you know, they require our members to be as safe as possible on every job, and there's no shortcuts, no excuses.
And what about those storms? We've all seen the images, acres and acres of line trucks staged and their crews ready for the green light to head out to reestablish power in regions devastated by natural disasters.
So one of the things that, you know, linemen have to do is they have to do a certain amount of climbing every year just to stay proficient at it. And one of the things we do every once a year is it's called Hurt Man Rescue. And that's where we go up and we save somebody that's hurt up on a pole. And you've got to go climb up there and physically get them down. So no matter what, every lineman out there has to do that task at least once a year. You know, and as a lineman, you know, everybody wants to take their turn because you don't want to expect the guys to go up every single day. So all the linemen, no matter how long you've been around, takes his turn. So, you know, and I like to do that, you know, it keeps you sharp. For instance, when the lights go out and there's storm work, the other part of our job that all love to do more than anything is when like a hurricane hits, you know, we travel to another state or a tornado and do that storm work, travel to, you know, when conditions are their worst. And that's when you really prideful time and the people are the most appreciative, you know, because during those storms, people are out of power. Well, you know, Superstorm Sandy, I was gone for almost 3 weeks living in a hotel. So one of the first things we do is we get a hotel that's out of power and they let us stay there, and then we get that hotel in power pretty quickly. And then we stay there the rest of the time.
So if you're without power and you're a hotel owner and you see some line trucks coming down the road, wave them in your parking lot.
Right.
And offer them a few rooms.
Exactly right. And it's actually that's probably the most exciting part of our job, really. I know Jeremy would, is the going out there and tackling a challenge, figuring out how you're going to get that pole that's down and get a new one up and get the lines transferred. And obviously the greatest part of our job is when you get it all up and you throw that switch and people come out and say thank you. There's nothing better than that, because we've become so dependent on electricity in our world today that...
Well, we do. I mean, so you have protocols like, you know, there's certain things that we don't do in the rain, you know, gloving, but now if it's an outage, but we have sticks. So if you have to do it, you know, if you can't take an outage on something, then you can use sticks to protect yourself from the line, insulating tool.
So like, even if it's raining.
Yeah, even if it's raining. But if, you know, if it's heavy, heavy mist or heavy dew or rain and you're gloving primary, you know, we don't glove in those conditions because it can track down your gloves through the water, even in an insulated bucket. But there are ways to get around that to still get the work done. So there's, you know, if there's an outage or if there's a time where you need to do it, we're still doing it.
So, you know, all our weather provisions, you know, we have some for regular work, you know, we don't work in certain conditions, but when the lights are out, you know.
There's not much that'll stop you.
There is no stopping us.
Yes. Yeah. So. Unless it's in the middle of a tornado or winds or speed so high that you can't use your bucket truck for something, you know, there's, you know, but very few instances do we not perform work when there's outages.
We asked all of these men to share a final thought on the museum. Here's Mike Walter.
Personal thoughts, I think it is one hell of a quality building, project, site. You know, I don't know that we realized the fact that it was going to be in the center of a huge development in St. Louis. The positioning of it is going to be fantastic in the next 5-10 years. I think we still need to figure out ways to market that museum. I think the museum should be seen by more people. I think it should be have some type of a revenue stream. So other than that, I think it's something we should all be proud of. And I just, you know, we really got to work on the IBW members as well as the community to understand what we really have there. Engineers. You know, I talked to, as a matter of fact, my doctor. And so when the project got started, he was really interested. He went down there and looked at it and everything. And as soon as I go to the doctor, he's always telling me, how's that museum going? You know, and I drove by there, man, that's excellent. I said, why are you so interested in museum? He goes, my dad was an electrical engineer. And he said, so he had dealings with the IBEW. And he said, the whole electric industry, I mean, is connected to whether you're a union person or not, the whole electric industry is connected to that building. And so that should, you know, it dawned on me. Yeah, I mean, engineering people should know the history. You know, I mean, it's all part of a much bigger picture than just linemen and wiremen.
Doug Miller.
Well, I think the whole thing is really neat. It was kind of makes the hair stand up on your back when you're up there in that room, that top floor where it all took place. So it was, regardless if I was a lineman or not a lineman, just the idea that's where the whole thing started right there, and you're in that same building was pretty neat, and I think you guys did a great job on it.
Mark Staffney.
It's an awesome project down there. It's unbelievable, especially I think the best time to see it is at night when you got all the lights on down there. You know, it's kind of sticks out down there. You guys did an awful lot of work and should be commended for it.
Business manager Jeremy Poor and Billy Howell.
And I think every trade that worked on that museum felt the same way we did. You know, like I said, tens of thousands of people are going to be looking at this, and I think every trade in there took pride in their work and didn't want to be the person that screwed anything up.
Yeah, it was impressive to see not just IBEW, but all the trades that were, yes. You know, and signing everything inside, and basically the integrity everybody took for the project was pretty neat.
And finally, Marty Polite.
I want to try to make sure it keeps going, and even, you know, I don't know how many more years I've gotten to trade, not a whole lot left, but I told Billy, I said, yeah, somebody needs to keep that museum going, and I think it's something for the younger people to see, and it's I thought it was really cool. It gives me a heebie-jeebies when I go down and try to imagine what it was like back in the early 1900s.
I have a great deal of admiration for these men, and the museum project has brought us closer together. I was never more honored than when they invited me to stand in for the photograph that was taken after they finished hanging all 10 of those bronze linemen in Founders Plaza. And if I may, I would like to share one final story with all my brothers and sisters out there who may be listening. When the museum project started and the online donation form went live, I waited anxiously for that first donation to come in. And when it did, guess who it was from? Ray Johnson. Now, if you don't know who Ray is, let me help you. Ray is the founder and president of the National Sisterhood United for Journeymen Linemen, a nonprofit organization she started that is dedicated to assisting families of fallen or injured IBW journeymen linemen, utility linemen, apprentice linemen, groundmen, operators, and their spouses and minor children. Since founding the organization, Ray and her organization have done some incredible work to help the families of fallen linemen. And if you're considering a charity to donate to this holiday season, please check out her website, nsujl.org. Thank you, IBW. Happy 128th birthday. Here's to many more.